How you doing?
That's your back.
Good. Vincent Woods.
Huh?
Vincent Woods is my name.
Vincent Woods.
We're in Stradbally, on the Dingle Peninsula, Kirkaglena, high up near the Connor Pass, where local man Dinny Galvin watches the world drive by. Dinny, tell me, did you grow up here in Stradbally?
I'm in Stradbally 79 years. And I was born below in the car park. I was born the Feast of St. Blazes. And do you know what it is for?
Throat.
You have it. And do you see the stone ditch there on the right, look?
Yes.
I own it for the end of that.
Ah, lovely.
And this was the farmyard. The old fella in years to come decided he'd take away the trees and down here and take away the houses and build this thing.
Yeah, built a house here.
That and we moved across the road. That's the farthest I ever went here. No further, dear.
Have you travelled much out here at all?
Never moved. I went to Scotland once with a crowd of sheepmen for a week. Okay. And that's as far as I got. And I'm happy out for I am.
Good. Well, it's not everyone can say that they're happy out where they are. And how, Dinny, how would you spend your day now?
Doing nothing.
Not the worst way.
It's all right in the summer because of the warm weather. But so the fright in the winter trying to pass the wet ones and the cold ones. Yeah. And they're damn long.
Yeah, they can be. They can be. I must say I'm always very glad
I'm retired,
to see the spring.
You see, I have the farm lit.
Okay.
I let the farm to my neighbour. He's a farmer.
Yeah. Oh, well, you're right. There's no point in...
The sister, the sister above in Dublin told me get rid of it.
Yeah.
It's too scattered all over the parish here. So I let it to Dowling.
The scale and scope, the depth and diversity of the Kingdom of Kerry is immense, almost immeasurable. And as with so many counties, Kerry stands at the gap of change. Much that is familiar, unique, unchanged, meets a sweep of the new. New communities, new languages, fresh energy and outlooks. The depth of old ways and the beauty and twist of old language embedded deep as rock. Well, 'twas lovely talking to you.
And you too, sir, the lady.
Yeah. You're listening to The County Measure. I'm Vincent Woods. We're making a journey around Ireland 100 years after independence and partition. To get a measure, to get many measures of all 32 counties. We're looking at place, landscape, and the people who shape their lives within these boundaries of community and county. In this series, I'm hoping to get a fresh understanding of each county and its people as we shape a radio atlas of Ireland. Just passing the foot of Mount Brandon Pilgrim Trail, lovely place in there, Cluain Sharrock, on our left, and the sea then resplendent. Beautiful landscape, you're reminded of the strength and wonder of this landscape. Foxglove everywhere, fern. And on our way to meet a farmer on this on Brandon Head, Kieran O'Sullivan, whose farm has been in the family for generations, but I suppose he has witnessed a great deal of change in his lifetime, and he's going to tell us a bit about the challenges that are facing farmers like himself now in this Gaeltacht area. Kieran is sitting on a low wall overlooking the farm and the sea, three sheepdogs by his side.
Here's Jack.
Jack
here's Tig, and that's Rogine.
Ah, the gorgeous.
This one is a bit special needs.
She's a bit shy, is she?
She's not shy. She's definitely deaf a bit, or short of hearing, but she's a nice old creature.
Ciarán's land runs from the road almost into the sea, the panorama sweeping from the Maori Islands on the left to the immaculate Thorbourne White Strand Beach on the right.
Just what a view. Oh my God.
Isn't it nice?
That is glorious.
Isn't it nice?
And Ciarán, is your farm in the family going back generations and generations?
It is, yeah.
And has much changed in it over the years?
I suppose it has. There's too many rules and regulations now, and you can't make a living out of it anymore. Basically, everyone that's farming around here now has to be doing something on the sideline. Or my father was able to rear five of us and put most of them through college, but you could not do that nowadays.
So we're walking from your house, Ciarán, down onto some of the land, and
down
again
to the shore.
Down, yeah.
Myself and my mother live here, and we have about 65 hectares. What's that in acres? 120, I think, there or thereabouts.
How many sheep have you?
About 160. I had 260, and they're proving to be futile, so downsizing. I'd be trying to do a bit other work as well, like I'd be fishing oysters there and anything, basically, for a day's pay. Tourism is all this place now is rigged out for tourism, but tourism is no good to most people around here. And it's turning out to be too touristy because there's too many people. Last weekend was crazy around here. Crazy. Hundreds of cars going out the road and back again. It's fine for them, I suppose. It's a nice place to go visit, but it is just crowded in for other the local people that aren't involved in tourism.
And Ciarán, you know, we're officially in a Gaeltacht area.
Yes.
So was your schooling through Irish, or was it a mix of Irish and English?
Irish was through Irish and everything else was in English.
Yeah.
But when we were national school, there was a Dauntless, the grant of £10 or €10 to speak Irish. And if we failed to get the £10, there was murder, because £10 was £10 at the time, so you had to go in front of a fairly stern
Kigara.
To speak Irish, and you had to pass it, which we did most of the time.
You obviously picked up a lot of Irish then, with through those years.
Yeah, I could talk Irish. And if we go to the mats there, they'd be ranting and raving there in Irish, and I'd pick up a lot of what they'd be saying, but they'd go very quick,
So you'd be able to buy and sell in Irish.
Well, arrogant is arrogant, whatever language.
Yeah, so you're looking back up at the skyline, at the hill, sloping down the house, your own house up there, Ciarán, and the outhouses, the sheds, farm buildings, and then the fields sloping down to the shoreline, and a series of really beautiful and solid big stone walls. And Ciarán, what keeps you doing the bit of farming?
What's that? I asked a man the other day there that was milking cows. We know no better now. I don't know any better at this stage. What am I going to go doing?
Well, there's obviously a part of you that still loves it.
Yeah,
and
I don't
loves
mind.
The land.
But you know something? Last autumn, now we're trying to sell lambs. Our kind of lambs there, them kind of lambs, they were being thrown away for 20 and 25 and 30 quid. The wool, it's worthless. It was worthless the last couple of years anyway. So, and there's red tape, and you must fill out forms and this and that. So, but it's a nice place where to live. It's a nice place to live.
And I suppose there must be part of you as well that nearly wants to honour that, the land and what the people before you did and what they worked for.
There won't be any of that. I know, it was left to me. And that's that. So I was the most likely candidate, if we knew my brothers, to get it.
And your brothers then chose to head off. They didn't stay about.
Well, my brother in Dundas went to college, yeah, and got degrees. There are a lot of young people here now going to Australia, but it's because they want to go for a year or 2 years or whatever. Yeah. I was there myself years ago for 6 months and I loved every second of it. And if I could live my life again, I'd have gone younger and stay there for a while. But no point in looking in the rear view. Anyone that ever left here, it was always in their head to come back. I suppose everyone wants to die in their own corner of the world.
Come across the crest of this little hill now and we're practically right into the sea. It's so clear on this morning, it's beautiful. I can see why you'd want to spend a bit of time here, all right. Kieran Gormila Margot, yeah.
Well, sure, we'll have to walk up again.
We will.
For the last tour.
Yeah. The song Igiri Atomachri, written and performed by Kieran's brother Aina O'Sullivan, who lived in Cologne in Germany and loved Kerry from afar. You're listening to The County Measure and we're in County Kerry. Great sweep of light rain and cloud in over the mountains here on the Conor Pass, the extraordinary corkscrew path up the mountain and across into Danganycúis. Gosh, you wonder who walked and traversed here over the centuries. Still this absolutely astonishing landscape.
So much of Kerry's identity is bound up with the sea. On Bloscaid Moor, Skellig Vichel, the life testimonies of Peg Sayers and Michal O'Gluichin, all shaped and empowered by the ocean at their door. These resilient people adapted to weather and landscape and built boats to match and take on the sea around them. The distinctive navogue of the Dingle Peninsula is a joy to the eye. And Eddie Hutch is a skilled maker of these crafts, as well as a distinguished roar.
Hutch in Gaelic, like, and Hutchinson in English. Yes, like. Yes. We are at the crowd in Dublin now, like.
I meet him at his home near Danganycúis.
When I went to England first, racing in the Thames, like, I used to race a lot, like, the marathons and everything. And the navogues, of course, there's no steering, but there's only no blades in the oars either. Yeah. And the VVC came along to us and they said, first of all, he said, you have no life jackets, you can't go on the river with a life jacket. And I said, we have a life jacket. And they said, we can't see him. And very hard to see it, I said. It's a sign in the front of the boat, little bottle of holy water about that size. That's our life jacket. So they couldn't stop us. They had to leave us to go on the race. And then they said, you have no blades in your oars, they said. No, I said, you cut down all our trees when you were in Ireland. I said, you left us nothing. So that was the end of EVC anyway.
Eddie still makes and repairs navogues in the crowded and busy workshop beside his house.
They're not in the workshop, what are you trouble? People like it the way it is because it's the real old thing like this. Now that's... This is the workshop down there.
Ah, yeah.
But this time of year, we're building a boat there now lately, on that side, and we build the bigger boats here.
Mm.
I built a big one here one time to the length of the shed, 38 feet, the same as the St. Brendan. And my oak is made for four people. It's 25 feet long. They're usually about 56 to 7 inches wide, or depends on the width. But in this country around here, for if you want to raise a boat, you will have to have it 25.
And how did you start with the navogue building, the boat building?
Well, I started here myself when I was young. I just saw a couple of the olders. They were stopped working. And I remember one fellow, anyway, I went back to him. He was living in Ballydavid. Mike Fitzgerald was his name. I asked him, could we see him building the boat? And no, he wouldn't. So you couldn't learn. You had to learn yourself. So I learned myself. Well, now we put on the lights here now, see the things here, because the things are all over the place. We belong to the rowing now, because this time here, there's all rowing and no building.
Well, now, Eddie, how would you start making a navel?
Now, when we want to dive out, this is the first thing you have to get. This is the steamer.
See, if this is almost like a creamery can.
I put my tumbler in there then. And we put into a plastic bag. Mm. And the bag is 22 feet long. Mm. Put in the pipe, the tumbler in, and put a concrete block on top of it then. Uh-huh. And it bends down 2.5 hours it takes to bring him around the circle of the boat. Now, behind your back here, now. Now, this is all the canvas now, look. All kinds of rolls of it there now.
Okay.
There is miles of canvas there now, look.
Okay.
That's now 18 ounce, that's heavy type.
It's great material, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
That keeps out the sea.
Yeah, amazing.
Yes,
yeah.
Amazing. Yeah. Every fisherman ever never went out to sea without a little bottle tied with a twine for fishing on the bottle and hang it inside in the frame in the front. And if they met a foxy woman, then going to the beach, you go to the thing, they'd come home again.
A red-haired woman.
Red-haired woman, yes. That any woman wouldn't do like that with a red-haired woman, yes.
Yeah.
Definitely saw it happening several times. If they ever met a foxy woman. So what I did, I said, I'll change the tradition. What I did, I brought a foxy woman fishing to him with me for a whole summer.
Good man.
And that finished all that. Good. They came home, they left the sea, they were outside the sea from their house. They took off. Went home and told the wives at home they'd be drowning this evening. So, and then 1976, then I put women out rowing here for the first time in those Nivogues, and they're out. So there are more women than men by us now, like this.
Yeah, but and good on you for breaking that.
Oh yes, I said I didn't say about the women rowing.
And Eddie, thinking about the Hutchinson's roots in Scotland and the history and all the rest.
Yes.
Did you then come into the Irish language and
I was brought up through Irish. I never had English until I was 18 years of age. I had the word of English now.
Yeah.
No. Nothing.
And when you're rowing, when you're, we say, doing anything on the water, do you think in English or in Irish?
Oh, Irish, yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yes, so we learned that, We think in Irish,
Great.
So that's it.
Yeah. God bless you.
Take care, lads.
Yeah.
Mind yourself. Bermo Gurung doing Lina. She teed Maruni Tad Ludum Christian. Doing Morges Fod Mahinsher. Mhrag do wis en glor drichtul Mhrag a schletes.
The Kerryman newspaper has been on the go for 120 years and has witnessed a lot of history, a lot of change. Testimony to the size of the county, the paper has North and South Kerry editions. I meet journalist and Kerry woman Sinead Kelleher in Denny Park in Tralee, not far from the newspaper's main office, to get her informed measure of Kerry. Sinead Kelleher of the Kerryman, we're here in Tralee, and one of the things that has struck me about the town is the diversity. I think, what is it, about 34 nationalities living in Tralee?
Yeah, I suppose Tralee has changed a lot over the recent years, which is fantastic for the town because it's seen many changes. And I suppose the Ukrainian community is quite large here in the last couple of years. But even before that, there's been a lot of asylum seekers and also just people from different European countries that have come to the capital here in Tralee. And you get different cultures as well mixing now, Irish music and African music. And it brings a new vibrancy to a town when you get new people coming in. And it changes it. But I think it can all work very well together when people, when people come together and enjoy life together and share their cultures, it can be very nice.
Yeah, it's lovely to hear the different accents, different languages, and again to get little intonations of Kerry in there at times in people's English. It's a really nice emerging mix.
In a lot of places this has been wonderful for rural communities, like places like Caherdaniel, where school numbers were declining, and now we have Ukrainian children there, so they have increased the numbers, they've got new teachers, they've contributed to the, many of them are even working locally, so that's just a tiny little village that has benefited hugely from Ukrainians and welcomed them.
No, the Kerry man is a good kind of eagle eye on the whole county and all of Kerry. And I just wonder, in looking at the various areas of the county, what sort of issues are people facing? I mean, come across reports of Gaeltacht areas and people having difficulty actually getting and affording houses.
Planning is again remains an issue, or at least you know it's very much an issue in particularly in rural areas, and trying to get planning on family lands, and you know people that want to live in rural communities not being able to build on their own lands due to stringent planning laws that exist. So yeah, that is an issue. I think it goes back to housing, but it also is an issue for the GA. We here in Kerry are a massive county for the GA, and we've seen a rural decline, you know, a rural depopulation, I suppose, is the right word. And that has led to GA teams not having enough people to play. And I think it's important that this is something that's going to have to be looked at. You know, if you want to live in your rural community, people should be able to. Obviously, I understand that we understand there's planning laws, but there needs to be, I suppose, a new look at these things to try and get more people back into rural communities.
Is there a particularly memorable day that sticks out from you from your career?
I suppose when you're covering Kerry, there's quite a lot of them, I suppose, from winning All Ireland to, you know, just a smaller community successes. But I suppose one day that sticks out in my head, I suppose, as a regional journalist, to be able to go and see when Prince Charles came to visit Kerry. That was a huge moment for Kerry, and to walk along Derrynane Beach, they were right here in Tralee. It was a fantastic day, and as a regional journalist, I got to see that.
And I suppose that was a very much a gesture of reconciliation too, and making peace with history.
Yeah, and it was, yeah.
Daniel O'Connell and all of that.
And it was just, you know, to see the excitement of everyone in the area, and everyone local was so excited and so involved with it. There's very few moments like that you'll get in anywhere in the world.
Sinead, I think we've kept you long enough.
No, you're
so we'll
fine,
release
yeah,
you
yeah,
now. We'll
right?
release you now for the court. For your day in court. Yeah. Thanks a million.
We have the girls at the moment, they're stepping forward. Now, we're about to change the moves. So, left shoulder and right shoulders. While you bend your knees with the shoulders. And now, this is a dance step from Ethiopia. With the shoulders bopping them back and forth. They're moving their heads left to right. Now we're working down low. Lifting the right leg and the left leg with our hands moving with them. Now we're just going to bop the right leg twice.
Hi, my name is Ebonluwa Esther Shunubi, and we are in the Tralee Sport Complex in County Kerry. So today we're going to be re-performing the dance, the African dance we did on the African Day. It just consists of different moves from different countries in Africa. So I put a bit of Ethiopia in there, a bit of South Africa, a bit of Nigerian, just to mix it up. So every culture is, you know, integrated into the dance.
So now we're back again to the base, to the first step.
I started dancing from the age of 4. I remember growing up in Nigeria, they would have, maybe we'd have parties, or people would call me to their house. There's this famous dance called Awilo Lokumba, and it's a mix of moving your hips and your waist, and let's just say I used to kill it.
Bopping the leg to the left and right. It is South African. I got that idea from, because I have a lot of South African friends, so I thought, why not put it in there? But the difference is that they actually lift the leg up and down, but because of the style of the music.
I think I'm very musical. I love singing, I love dancing, I can play the drums. So anything about music is just, I love it. I love playing the conga as well, the African drums. Everything about music, I love it. So came to Ireland at the age of 11. Saw the Irish culture, the Irish dancing, the Irish dance. I just used to love, I love everything. When it comes to dancing, I love to learn every type of dancing that's out there.
We all know the famous bopping your shoulders forward and shaking the body.
What you're describing in terms of dance and that dance culture in your home part of Nigeria is very like the culture in places in Ireland as well.
It is.
Great passion for dance, yes. This natural ability to dance, and that mixing of dance and music, and kids stepping into it really early.
Yes, I think it really is important that once a child actually finds that passion in dancing, there is that room and that opportunity for them to be able to dance. That's why I started, you know, teaching dancing, because when the child loves dancing, then you know, they should have something in the community, a place where they can, you know, they have a foreign community, which is very important, a community. You know, being young, you know, growing up in Ireland, I didn't really have any of this. But now Ireland is so, oh my God, Ireland is integrated so much. I came here in 2004, and now it's 20 years I've been here. So to see the change in Ireland is fantastic.
Usually we do this move with an handkerchief back home. So you have an handkerchief, and you throw it forward and back.
I teach Afrobeat dance as well. And I do want to infuse different cultures. Like I said, include Irish culture, include African culture. Inclusion, it's very important.
So in a way, a brand new, you know, famous river dance out of Ireland. Yes. But this is almost like a whole new river of dance that comes from different parts of the world.
Yes,
and
different
meets here.
Yes, it is, you know, just to mix it up and, like I said, create something beautiful where everybody can feel included.
Our right hand out, and then we're breaking our body down. Break it down, break it down. That's right, that's it, girls.
In Sevilla, Hani Hodahini, she is Moha. He lads so Mala Amar told the handsome new Kadir Fa. I took Fadnum, sir.
So, my name is Seamus Barra O'Sullivan, aka Sullivan, and myself and Rory Lynch Bantam made this song called An Plané Tír. The inspiration behind the song An Plané Tír was the idea of place. I was thinking a lot about An Tlán Tír, the Western Isle as it's known. The Blasket Island, this amazing, difficult place to live that's off the coast of Kerry. A community, I suppose, that was formed because of rising rents in the mainlands and how people were kind of being forced to the extremities, but their story is a story of survival.
Allaloo, palaloo, a stoon share, nadder, one biggest two. Kahatu vekuidamach, eishtach lumsa, min hosti sa gobermansa. So my cavern is better than I feel like Skiel go green at Gonga Fall. My heart a hill of oldish boy, bullish taka DM you saying, Ed a more from me. I can spear gate the man who was sold out of Panama raid. It's my heart ain't a good video, Rushiki score here in a home. Pretty please the nigga next to the meet the one star shoon.
You're listening to The County Measure.
The Shannon Dolphin is about to depart here from Tarbert Pier in North Kerry, going across the bay to Kilimer and Kilrush in Clare. This daily toing and froing across this stretch of water, shortening the road for so many people, this fantastic point of connection. How are you doing?
Oh, thanks.
Vincent Woods, how are you?
Not so bad.
We're making a documentary on Kerry.
We're all clear people now to work in this boat.
That's allowed, though.
Oh,
you set foot in Kerry every day.
We do, that's it, sure. Yeah, that's the way it goes, yeah.
A good, busy service, isn't it?
Oh, it is, yeah. That's it now. For this time of year, it's good. We have two boats on now from May to September, so we have, yeah.
Yeah,
mixture of everything, so we have.
Yeah,
motorbikes, bicycles, campers, walkers, everything. Yeah, you name it, they come on. Even the circus often crosses now and again.
Right?
Yeah, that's it.
What's your name?
Brenda McMahon.
Good to meet you.
Okay, thanks very much.
About the chair, man.
Okay.
A striking feature of some of the towns and some of the architecture in rural Kerry is the colour on the houses. So you get these blues and yellows and pale greens and lovely old colours that really seem to blend into the landscape. And you get gorgeous terraces in parts of Tralee, you get it in Kinmare, see it flash through Listowel, just came through Ballylongford there now as well, and lovely terrace at the end of the town. And it's not everywhere you see it anymore, and it's really lovely.
Kerry is rich with evocative place names, and one of my favourites is Sneem, that lovely town west of Kinmare on the Iveragh Peninsula. The name comes to us from Irish, of course, from Ansnaim, the knot, a ravel of water in the river. This is a busy tourist town, but my eye is taken by something quiet, a simple sign that reads Sneem Resource Centre. And here I meet Maura O'Brien.
Don't be nervous.
I'm always
nervous.
Don't be nervous.
I'm trying to get glasses back into a case that I took out. No, I can't.
Look, I have the same. I have the same. And Maura, tell me a little bit about the town and life here and what it's like to live here.
It's lovely to live here. It's a lovely village. Lovely and quiet in the winter. Very busy in the summer.
Yeah.
Extremely
busy.
Can
see that today.
It's crazy in the summer.
The stream of traffic through in all directions.
Buses are crazy in this village,
And it's beautiful. I mean, I love the colour in the town.
Yeah, well, the people are very proud of it. They do a lot of work here. We have a lot of volunteers that go out and do, you know, pollinator gardens and beekeeping and every kind of thing. Scouts. Yeah, so the town is really good. It's a lovely place to live.
And did you grow up close to
here? I was born and bred here. Yes.
In the town?
Yeah, well, I was in the town, yeah. My brother and sister were out of the town, about 4 miles. Yeah,
great.
Yeah,
so
born and bred here.
Sneem through.
Left here for 2 years to England and came back again. Couldn't wait to get back here. Because you can actually leave your front door open, go to the shop, all your neighbours, everybody watches for each other and everybody knows everybody's kids. So if there's a child down the road that shouldn't be, oh, the parents say, oh, hello, your child is down here. Are they supposed to be down here? And it's great.
Great. So a real sense of community.
Oh, big time. Big time, yeah, yeah. Very, very close community, yeah. All our young people that have left maybe 10, 15 years ago are all trying to get back here.
Okay.
Because it's such an easygoing life here.
But of course, it's probably not easy for young people to come back and find
hard.
A place to live.
It's very, very hard here. There's an awful lot of young couples that are trying to come back here. They're renting houses. The rent is atrocious. And mortgages are a disaster. Forget about that. My daughter now, she's trying to get a house. And my other daughter's in America. She wants to come home, but it's impossible.
It's actually really sad to think
of that. It is very sad, but we have actually a brilliant school here as well.
We're just across the road.
Yes, absolutely brilliant school. They have an autism class, you know, special needs class, a special room. It's absolutely brilliant. It's called the Rainbow Room. But my daughter, a special needs son, my grandson, so she wanted to come back here because the schooling is so much better. But she can't come back here. There's nowhere to go. Where is she supposed to live, like? Even people coming in, we have the digital hub and they try to bring people in so they can work from home. But they've no homes to work from because they've nowhere to live. So that's suffering. So everything you're trying to do in the village to make it better is suffering because they have nowhere to live. But
something really wrong about that.
There is something very wrong about it. Yeah. Very wrong about it. But everything is so expensive. It's just, it's gone beyond a joke now.
Oh, it's lovely to be here. It's lovely to meet you.
Oh, and it's great.
Great.
Lovely to meet you too.
For your time.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Kerry has a strong legacy of strong women in all walks of life. Eileen Dove Ní Chonaill, Julia Clifford, the great musical Begley sisters, the many women who reared families and worked the land, who shaped our country and their place in it. And one young woman who is particularly conscious of the lives of these sung and unsung women is local artist and illustrator Ciara Kenny.
Hiya.
Ciara.
Yes, Vincent.
Sorry, Vincent.
I meet her beside one of her pieces of public art, a utility box with an image of Peg Sayers on it.
Very glad to see you're here.
Thank you so much.
On an unexpected corner in Tralee Town.
Yes.
And tell me, why did you choose Peg?
I suppose she's a really famous Kerry woman, but you don't really see a huge amount of positive representation about her.
She was a remarkable woman. You have to give all that independence of spirit and the cultural heritage that she carried from Dunqueen out to the Blaskets and back, and that really went out into a big wide world. I mean, she's a really important cultural figure.
And I think people kind of associate her with the curriculum, but like, she was this incredibly important Shanachie. She contributed so much to Ireland's folklore, you know, and Kerry's kind of, I suppose, our cultural impact as well. So yeah, she's an amazing woman, and I kind of wanted to depict her in a way that was more smiley. People have a kind of a dour image of her, so, you know, she was supposed to have been a very funny woman and really interesting to talk to, so I just wanted to commemorate her in a little way.
That comes through in her writing, and it does, that lovely spirit comes through in your representation of her.
Yeah,
it's lovely. I mean, that kind of smiling face is delightful to see on this corner.
Yes.
And Kira, where did you grow up?
So just outside Tralee. I'm from just outside Tralee and still living here, so very much kind of part of the area. So it was nice to get a chance to do something that's within my own community as well.
So you're a proud Kerry woman who likes to represent other proud Kerry women.
Very much so, yes, exactly. Yeah.
And tell me about that interest as well in women, you know, and women in history and that representation of Irish women.
Yeah, so I guess I do illustration and cartoons. A lot of it would be kind of folklore inspired, Irish history inspired, but I kind of lean towards women's stories. I guess because I am an Irish woman as well, it's of interest to me, but also we wouldn't have had as much maybe exposure to that growing up. So I like learning about it personally, and then what I learn from it, I like to turn into images and maybe share that online, or, you know, ways for other people to maybe learn about it as well.
Kira, it's lovely to see these.
Thank you.
And to know you're doing all this work, and to look across and see
yourself.
And see Peg smiling back over at us.
Exactly, yes, yeah.
The best of luck with
it
all.
Thank you so much.
My name is Paddy Bush, and I'm a poet who writes in both Irish and English. I've been enchanted by the landscape of Ivrah and South Kerry since I moved here more than 50 years ago. One of my favourite vantage points in my part of Kerry is above the pass of Cumichiste between Waterville and Cardaniel on the Ring of Kerry. 200 feet below, you can see the tourists' buses and cars snaking around the twists and turns of the road, with programmed stops to photograph the sea and land panorama that stretches from the Beara Peninsula to the south to Skellig Mhí Chathair, na Blascaeilge, and the Corcuigne Peninsula to the west. All of it sometimes a magical blue shimmer. You can follow another road, the Old Butter Road, which catered only for pedestrians, pack horses, and personal horses for those who could afford them. You can see the same spectacular views as the tourists below, with only the odd booted and rucksacked hiker for company. For me, a real vantage point is one that also offers perspectives on things like belief, myth, history, and sometimes indeed on time itself. And that's why I usually admire the view with my back up against a Bronze Age wedge tomb. Impressive in itself, a huge capstone standing on upright straight slabs. It is sited near a ridge marking a natural territorial division, and also along a natural pedestrian route through these hills. Importantly, it has a view of Bull Rock to the south, the island that was the pre-Christian afterworld. So I lean against a prehistorical burial monument, a territorial marker, and a signpost towards the afterlife. And I also often think of one of the founding figures of modern Ireland, whose home at Derrynan lies in the sheltering woods below. In 1828, 10 years before the road below existed, Daniel O'Connell won the Clare election, becoming the first Catholic to take a seat in Westminster. Catholic emancipation followed a year later. When O'Connell came home to Derrynan in the summer of 1828, he was met at this wedge tomb by the Cuswinter, the ordinary people he represented. Men, women and children streamed up from townlands such as Cumath Leucon, Derrynane, and Farinirach, and Rinneen, Tower, and over the hill behind from Nahinchi, Ord Cairach, Cum na Horna, and Glaun Mór, and many more. I imagine O'Connell addressing them from atop this monument in celebration and hope. That celebration and hope survives today in a song, Donal Bean O'Connell Queen, that was composed for that triumphant homecoming by O'Connell's neighbour, Tomás Rua O'Sullivan, who was known to dance an accompanying rhythm for his songs. When I continue my walks, accompanied now by the shades of O'Connell's Cuswinter, I hear that song of hope, those celebratory steps on the capstone of the tomb.
You're listening to The County Measure, and we're in County Kerry.
Beautiful summer day, and here at a crossroads not too far from Nadine, from Kenmare and on the Ring of Beara, in the little village of Tusist, and popping in to meet the woman who runs the local post office.
I'm 95 years. I was born on the 2nd of February, 1929.
Long time ago.
It is a long time ago. I don't know how I survived so long.
You'd have seen a lot of changes in those decades.
Oh, yeah. Milking the cows in the morning, going to the creamery and trying to get ready for school. Our parents having to cook while we were away, do all the housework and the farm work. And
hard work.
Hard work. It was 13.
And Maureen, have you ever lived away anywhere else, or did you stay here?
No, this is where I lived all my life. I got married in 1951.
And how many days a week, Maureen, would the shop here be open?
Oh, God, it was opened every day. There were no such thing as...
No such day as a holiday, biggest holiday.
No.
Well, I hope you take the occasional bit of a rest now.
Yeah, well, I have a few flowers and things out there.
They're lovely outside.
Yeah. I water them when my daughter-in-law comes over in the evening sometimes. But sometimes they say the morning is the best time to do it. So I don't.
West of Kenmare, on the Beara Peninsula, we're close to Glenshquin Park and what's said to be Ireland's highest waterfall. But what's also remarkable in this landscape is the little that's left of the original woods, forests, essentially rainforest, given the climate here. And I'm sure many people will know Owen Dalton's fine book, An Irish Atlantic Rainforest, which is centred not far from here in West Cork. Same landscape, same vestige of
of trees, of forestry left and struggling to survive. And we're going to meet Owen this morning to get his insight into what surrounds us here.
Owen Dalton's book, An Irish Atlantic Rainforest, explores his personal journey into rewilding a farm in nearby West Cork. In this place of the yew trees on Uruk, I meet Owen and we walk this ancient land.
Owen, we're going to walk towards the woods via this stone circle. It's obviously an important marker of the landscape and of settlement here.
It very much is. My understanding is that it dates to the Bronze Age, and just beyond that is the ancient rainforest of Uruk. I use the word ancient there, and that's important because we know that less than 1/1000th of the area of Ireland is covered in ancient woodland. I'll just point something out here while we're walking. Underneath that rocky ridge to our west, you can see all of the great canopy of Uruk rainforest. And sadly, as wonderful as it looks from here, Uruk wood is completely and utterly wrecked. It's a dying forest. And the reason for that is severe overgrazing by primarily sika deer and feral goats, but also people's livestock, sheep, and I have seen cattle in there as well, but I don't know if the cattle are still there.
We'll walk on and just, but tell me as we do then, what damage do those grazers do that so damages the forest?
The first thing they do is they prevent the trees of the forest from regenerating. So every little oak or birch or holly or hazel or whatever else that germinates as a seedling gets immediately eaten. And what you end up with is a geriatric forest. You've no trees younger than when the problem started. The other thing they do is that such a native forest should have a really, really rich ground flora, extremely diverse of wildflowers and ferns, and overgrazing strips all that out. So instead of having that diversity, you have a barren, sterile woodland floor. The other thing that overgrazing does is it prepares the ideal conditions for takeover by invasive plant species like rhododendron.
Extraordinary. I mean, it's in a way the perfect storm, isn't it?
Yeah. So, like, we're going to have to do a little bit of... This is going to be a little bit difficult going now for a few minutes. So we're standing on a small little natural pebble beach where the forest comes down to the water, and you can see that there's a wonderful dappled light coming through the big old oaks all around us. Mostly oaks here. I can see holly there too, and there's ash there behind, but it's an oak dominated part of the forest.
And roughly what size is this forest on, do you know?
From memory, I think you're talking around 350 acres, but I could be wrong on that. But again, you know, compared to the lifeless barren wastes that extend beyond it, it's really just a handkerchief. You'd have to go a long way before you find something like this. Generally speaking, in Ireland, there's so little of this left. You know, it's just heartbreaking to see that it's still completely stripped bare. So, you know, it looks relatively lush because you've got so much bracken fern in the understory, but that's covering up a complete dearth of life, of diverse life that there should be here.
So that's the bracken fern is really covering up what's not there.
It is, exactly, yeah. But I remember last year I was here around this time of the year. I did see quite a few oak seedlings and aspen and birch and other native trees, but also native wildflowers like yellow pimpernel and dog violet and wood sorrel. You can be sure that the following week they were gone because they would have been eaten. But the point is that if you were able to somehow lift the grazing pressure, everything is there just waiting to be released. And that's what makes it so frustrating.
It's a miracle of seeding, isn't it? It's what,
can
come back naturally.
Yeah. Ireland is naturally a rainforest nation. There's no reason why we couldn't be striving to bring that back. If you radically reduced grazing levels in places like Yurok and created the conditions so that you paid the local farmers handsomely to allow the forest to spread back out onto their land, you could be seeing a real renaissance of wild natural habitats like rainforest, but not only. All our other natural habitats as well have just as much need of being brought back. We could have a fantastic ecological reawakening in this country. I'm deeply in love with this landscape, but I think I'm also inspired just as much by what could be in places like this as what's here. It's such a special place, this.
Ancient, fragile, resilient, renewed, Kerry and its people hold their kingdom proud within the borders of county and nation. What is it here that makes Kerry so unique? The knot, the twist, the power of forest and mountain and sea, the glory of music and language, the voice of Micheál Mura Hearty, the ball high in the air and the hands reaching for it, the rouse of Begley music, the journey over the Connor Pass into Kirkaglina, Carrin Tuathail rising in mist and sunlight. If you could bottle something of this spirit, we'd all be young forever.